It's Sunday morning. I'm wearing pajamas, so you know what that means.
Twister.
Yes, and it's time for the Sucks Podcast. I'm your host, Brad.
I'm your host, Dave.
And with us, as always, is producer Joe.
Hey, guys, what's going on?
This, of course, is a podcast where we talk about design, intentional and otherwise, and all the ways that UX,
user experience design,
impact us every day. Now, we are lovers, not experts. We started this podcast as a way to talk about why things were made the way that they are.
And where those design decisions might have gone off the rails.
Indeed. How are we feeling this morning, fellas?
Not so bad.
Joe, you have Jovid-19, is that right?
Jovid-19.
Yeah, I popped positive on Thursday.
Oh, man. Poor guy.
It's not so bad. I mean, yeah. I don't want to dismiss it because I know this has been, you know, everybody gets it differently, but I got lucky. I was feverish for a day or two. I had a cough for a day or two, and I feel like I'm coming through it. And just
now, after you tested positive, I'm assuming you went to the hometown buffet.
And that's
like loaded up on all the things. I think that's where people go after they get COVID-19, right? Or Jovid-19.
Well, yeah, Jove. Well, I went to the Sizzler buffet. Sizzler. Cost all over the Steve's Guard and definitely.
Hey, all jokes aside, I believe Joe got Jovid from IHOP. Am I wrong? It's possible, right? We didn't get it. But yeah, we went to a very busy IHOP. Mm-hmm. And what do we do there, guys? But let's save the IHOP for later. Let's talk about this movie we saw.
So the fellas went to see Bullet Train in something called 4DX. Now, we're going to need to explain what 4DX is because while it exists in many major markets, a lot of people might not know what this is. And certainly many of them probably haven't experienced this. Yeah. So who wants to take a stab at actually describing 4DX for users?
4DX.
It's an immersive experience.
Oh, my God. Okay. So, yeah, Joe, it is an immersive experience. Look, let me go back a little bit because I remember this. I've done this. This has been around forever. This isn't a new thing. I saw Harry Potter in quote-unquote 4DX. I don't know if that's what they call it then. They called it 4D or something. And it was like the seats moved. Like, so you go and you're watching the movie, and if you're riding a broom with Harry Potter, you're actually flying around. And that's all it was. Maybe there was some like air or something, like maybe they changed the temperature, but it wasn't to the extent of what we saw. Like, this was over the top, like immersive experience to the max. What type of things did we see, guys, or experience?
I mean, besides the seats moving, they actually like flick things at your feet and punch you in the back, and like there was like lights and wind and fog and
snow.
And
there was water. Snow. Yes. Did you see the snow?
Yeah.
So let me give this a stab here. The 4DX experience is meant to sync up the movement of the chairs and the experience in the theater with what's happening on the screen. So if we saw Bullet Train, when the train crashes, the seat jostles all around. When they're outside and they've got the 200-mile-an-hour wind in their face, you have wind jets in your face. When somebody gets punched in the back, your chair will do the helpful step of punching you in the back, literally.
How about getting spit on? That was fun, Brad.
Many people get spit on in this movie. And when that happens, it happens, I think, on three occasions.
Yeah.
There is a little jet of water that will spit on your face. Now, does this sound like fun?
Oh my God.
Your mileage might vary.
Yeah. Now I wanted to do a whole episode about this, or at least a mini-sode, and you guys weren't down for it. You thought it didn't rise to the resistance. But I was amazed. Like, we'll do that mini-sode in like one sentence. This is my one sentence review. I thought it worked best when it did the least amount. Like when it was not less is more in this instance. So there's an old, you know, we're all film school rejects, right? Mm-hmm. Or you guys graduated. But like, you know, the technique of tilting the camera to create disorientation. It's a very subtle trick that cinematographers do. Mm-hmm. The seats actually moved. And the first time it did it, I thought I was just a little loopy, right? Maybe too much caffeine. But then I noticed out of the corner of my eye, the other seats moving. I was like, ah. That's brilliant. But when like blood is splattering on my face and then wind bursts of air are hitting my ears to make it like bullets going by, I was like, it was a bit much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bit much. I agree. I mean, it was ultimately a distracting experience, although I do think that we picked the perfect movie to see in 4DX.
Absolutely.
Because Bullet Train is a B movie. You know, it's a roller coaster ride.
I disagree.
It's fun. It's not to be taken seriously. And the fact that some of these effects are taking away from the actual filmic experience presented on the screen isn't necessarily a bad thing in this case.
Yeah. Hey, Brad, I agree with that, but I got to disagree that it's a B movie. B movie's low budget. We had this debate, whatever. Maybe it's the spirit of a B movie. I would call it more of a fast food movie. See what I did there, Brad?
Yeah.
You see what I did?
Well, yeah. I'm guessing that our users know what this episode is about today because they've seen it. It's the episode title. But what a brilliant segue into
our main thank you, Brad. Topic.
But you know what? Before we do that, we should talk about
it's the cool shit. It's the cool shit. It's the cool shit.
It's old people telling you what's cool.
All right, guys, keep it with the theme of this show. I'm going to keep this quick and simple. We're going to breeze through this. It's going to be fast food time. All right. This first one I have is zombies, what I'm calling zombies for real, for real. Okay.
Wait, do I need to get out my crossbow and my hatchet?
I think so. A couple of weeks ago, Joe, I think, made a joke about zombies, but look at that. I never thought zombies, it was one of those things I always thought could never be real. But so scientists have taken pigs, okay, and they have – the pigs have been dead like 2 hours, all right? Okay. And then they inject some secret B-movie formula into the pigs.
It's glowing green. I've seen this
movie. Exactly. It even has a B-movie name that's called Organ X. It's like unobtainium, you know? Like, what the hell? So they put it in there. And it has this, I got to find what it has in it. It has stuff in it. I'll put
it. Probably has some fast food type ingredients in it.
Yeah. Is it the juice from the boys? What's that called?
Exactly. All right. So here's what it has. This team, they mix the animal's blood and an artificial hemoglobin with Organ X, which is a solution that includes anti-inflammatory meds, nerve blockers. Here's the parenthetical. Okay. Just bury the lead here, to prevent a return to consciousness. Okay.
So they actively prevent a return to consciousness.
Yes.
Okay.
It also has nutrients and drugs that fight cell death. But still, to me, it's like, what, did nobody ever think that to raise the dead? They're like, Frankenstein couldn't come up with that concoction. So this project is a follow-up to a breakthrough where scientists revived the dead pig's brains, right? Using the precursor, the solution before was called Brain-X. So the crazy thing is, after they did that, they thought, oh, maybe we could revive a whole body. So look, this has practical implications. It has very good, you know, the thing with science is it always starts from a good place and then it goes off the rails. The idea here is there's a big window between when you can take organs for organ transplants, right?
Yeah.
And there's always a shortage of organs that they can use. I mean, there's a whole bunch of procedures that have to happen before you can't just like somebody dies and you just start cutting them up. Like, you got to wait a little while, and there's all this bureaucracy and good bureaucracy. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. So this will allow them, if that time goes by, to inject the Organ X and then fix those organs, have those organs be good, and then take them out. They still don't know yet whether it's a long time from being like a human thing, but this is one of those things where we say cool shit, and I mean it's cool shit doesn't necessarily mean it's good shit. Right? Because right. You could see if they don't put, because you know somebody with to is going to twirl their mustache and go, what if we don't include the nerve blockers? Like, what happens right. when and here's on that note, there was this one wacky thing that happened is the pigs that were treated with OrganX, they would jerk their heads when the researchers injected iodine contrast solution for imaging purposes.
These dead pigs.
Yeah, they had no idea why that happened. They said there was no brain activity, so it wasn't a brain thing. But it's like, this is haunting shit. This is haunting shit. Because you know somebody's going to do this, inject it into a human, and see if they come back. Like, this movie writes itself. So, you know what that is, Brad? You know what that is, right?
Cool what is this? Shit. I was going to sing it, but I'm questioning it, you know?
Cool shit. Ghoulish shit.
What? Anybody else got cool shit? We got time for one more.
You got one, Joe?
Yeah, it almost kind of relates to this. So another sci-fi fantasy is the idea of scanning your brain and importing it into a computer so that you can live forever. So you don't have to be reanimated. You just don't die. Your self lives on. If you could. Yeah. And that's the question. Like, is it really you? Would you know that you're... Do we know if we're just brains in jars right now? All that stuff that you talk about over 2 a.m. Taco Bell.
my brain is in a can of cream corn.
But the tricky part, though, is that we have like billions of brain cells and trillions of neural links. So scanning it, even with the best technology, would take like 10 years or something crazy. Like somebody I heard like it was like if a million computers were working around the clock, it would still take like 10 years to scan a whole brain or something like that.
So you're saying I've got a chance.
We've got a chance. But roundworms have like 320 brain cells, very scannable. So they did that. They scanned a roundworm's brain, implanted into a Lego robot, and literally had some of the reactions that the roundworm would have, like towards food. And so they, you know, implanted a roundworm brain into a toy robot and it did like roundworm shit.
Wow. Nice. You know what that is, Joe?
Cool shit, cool shit.
That is some really cool shit. Hey, yeah. You know, with quantum computers now, you know, being the thing, I'm guessing that time to scan a human brain will be vastly
reduced.
So I'm looking forward to being put in a can of cream corn, guys.
Yeah, and I'll be reanimated and I'll just, you know, I'll carry the corn around.
But, you know, I'm not really interested in immortality. That doesn't really have any appeal to me.
Yeah. Oh, I do. Why not, Brad? You're not having fun?
I've already done all the things.
No, but there's new things to do in virtual reality. Come on. There's so many things. You could fly. I mean, look at Neo. You do all those things. And then, you know what? If you get bored with it, like, say, 600 years has gone by, you make a death. You trick yourself into thinking you're mortal like we're doing now. And then you die. And then you come back and you live another life.
I don't know. I don't have so much ego that I think I should live forever.
I don't think it's ego. Anyway, this has gone on to... This is going into philosophical shit.
We're talking about quantum computing, and we're talking about building robots from neural pathways, and we're talking about zombies. It's all on a theme, and I think we should just leave it all alone.
All right, let's get back to the fast food.
Before we do that, we should pay some bills and do an ad read. So why don't we do that, and then we'll come back and talk about fast food.
Gotta buy those French fries. Mm-hmm.
David!
Hey, Brad.
Now, I know from our offline discussions that you're interested in stepping up your style game now that you're actually going into an office, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Got to snazz it up.
Let me ask you, has it been easy for you to find your perfect style and fit at the right price?
I got to tell you, Brad, I'm kind of a very common size. Yeah. So when I find something I like,
basic even.
Yeah, I'm very basic, one might say. Mm-hmm. I can't find the size. It's like they're out. It's very frustrating, Brad. I need a solution.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned solutions because you're not going to believe this. You are not going to believe this.
Tell me,
what
Brad.
A coincidence that this is happening right now in real time. I have a solution for you. Oh, you ready for it?
I'm excited.
Mizzen and Main!
Ooh.
Mizzen and Main has your office-ready style that will still fit your work-from-home comfort.
Ooh.
Okay. Let me throw some terms at you here. Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
Ready? Brace yourself. It'll blow your mind. Okay. Wrinkle resistant. Four-way stretch.
Yes.
Moisture wicking fabric. Does that sound up your alley?
Wicking, Brad, they have witches? They have witches making their clothes? No, I am into this, Brad.
Wicking. And I actually...
Wicking.
I mean, what does that mean exactly? I mean, I get it from context, but wicking? Yeah.
Oh, wicking.
What the hell are we talking about? What does that mean?
I don't know, Brad, but I'm thinking what that means is that they give me powers. Right, like the clothes, I put them on, and then I could like entice people to like do things I want, or I can become invisible.
Get your Wiccan powers on, only with Mizzen and Main. Mizzen and Main, Mizzen and Main is there for all of your style comfort goals. All right, comfortable,
yeah,
breathable,
I love
packable,
it.
Machine washable. That's what should come into your mind when you're talking about Mizzen and Main. That's Mizzen and Main, MAIN.com. And use the promo code SUCKS and see if that does anything for you. I have no idea. And we are back with today's episode, which is, of course, fast food. Big topic. Fast food has so much design and UX principles put into it. It is a meaty topic, pun intended. This is not an episode to shame people, okay? I want to make that clear. I am personally fascinated by the sheer amount of design thinking that is put into this entire industry.
Mm.
This is not a shaming episode. As we'll get into, I eat fast food from time to time. I'm sure many of our listeners and users do. But fast food is a little difficult to actually define in today's time. So what I thought I would do is read a list. And you guys tell me if you think it's fast food or not.
Okay. This sounds fun.
I'm going to start easy.
Alrighty.
McDonald's. Fast food?
Yes. Fast food. Clear.
Subway.
Yes. Fast food.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Okay.
In-N-Out.
Yes.
Steak and Shake.
Yes.
I haven't seen one of those in ages. Mm-hmm. I can't remember.
Shake Shack.
Yeah. Fast food.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Domino's.
Yes. Yes.
Panera.
Yes.
No.
Mm-hmm. See? California Pizza Kitchen.
Yes.
No.
7-Eleven's hot dog wheel. That rotating hot dog machine.
That's just sadness. That's not even.
Correct. Spoiler alert. Correct.
Wawa does it better. Wawa has a whole fast food situation going on for you East Coasters.
Yeah.
Okay. Red Lobster.
No.
No.
Chili's.
No.
Chili's Express.
I don't know what that is.
Well, yeah, that's sure. That's the baby. The one at the
airport.
It says
Express. Yeah. It says Express.
Food trucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jamba Juice or Robex.
Yes.
No.
Mm-hmm. Dave's Hot Chicken.
Let's not talk about that.
I was going to say, Dave's Hot Chicken is definitely fast service.
Yeah, I don't know what that is either.
Okay. You got to try Dave's. It's pretty good. Not the best. Not the best in line, but it's pretty good. Sushi counters.
No, definitely not.
No.
Okay. A buffet. The buffet at the Wynn Hotel in Vegas.
No.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a, yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Right. It's fast.
It is. It's food.
Buffalo Wild Wings.
B-dubs.
It is not. It's clearly casual dining, but I have to make a note here that I'm amazed that they created an entire franchise off of an appetizer.
That's right, which is interesting, right? So that's because there's not a clear definition or delineation between fast food. What is fast food? What is fast casual? What is a quick serve restaurant? So let's break down what we're actually referring to before we go into the weeds here. Now, Joe, you did some research here and you came up with some common themes and characteristics that all fast food shares, even if it's not standardized. So, you know, maybe something doesn't have to have all of these things, but these are some traditional characteristics. Can you break those down for us?
Sure. So first of all, you mentioned QSR, which is the industry term, quick serve restaurant, which is the umbrella that covers, I think, all of the stuff we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And I also work in advertising and it's used there too, which is, you know, a big proponent of fast food is the advertising. So they kind of go hand in hand. So I'll kind of run it down. This is almost going to be like a Jeff Foxworthy. You might be a QSR if your function is primarily for takeout. Like you may be able to sit down at a restaurant, but you know, primarily it's for takeout. For every one person sitting in the dining room, there's 20 people in at the line taking away and in the drive. If your menu is predominantly presented on a screen or an overhead board, you might be a QSR. We mentioned drive-thrus. All drive-thrus are easily fast food, but doesn't mean all fast foods have drive-thrus. You have industrial production lines, and you're basically serving like one main thing. You're either a burger place or a burrito taco place or a pizza place. Okay. You're focused on one general.
Or you're a Taco Bell and Pizza Hut.
You're a Taco Bell Pizza Hut. Yes. Let's see. If your utensils are plastic, you're probably a QSR. If your condiments come in single-use packets or your salt and peppers come in single-use packets, you're probably a QSR. You're inexpensive. Your price point's somewhere in like the five, definitely under $10 range.
Not anymore.
Right. We'll talk about that too. Like even the value meals have changed. If your dining experience comes on a tray and you have to leave that tray on top of a laminated trash bin with a swinging door, you're a QSR. If you're a manager and your supply management includes ordering a stockpile of bags and food wrappers, you're probably a QSR. So basically, okay, I'd say it's basically anything up to and including casual dining. Like once you actually sit down and you have a table service and a menu that you're handed, you're basically quick serve up until that point. And then I guess where it blurs the line is like I've seen some fast food places where they'll give you a number and a food runner will bring it out, but that's kind of the very, very minimum. And then obviously that happens similar. And then we talked about fast casual. It still fits in all of that. Even if your interior design is a little bit more upscale, your price point's a little bit more upscale, your Chipotle's and Panera Bread's, still the function is get in, get the food, get out quickly. That's your primary function. Now we call it fast food. The industry calls it quick serve.
That's interesting because when we were going through this list, I was thinking anything that's bad for me is fast food. Anything that's good for me is not. So
yeah,
I Panera sense that. Bread didn't get fast food for me. Jamba Juice didn't get fast food for me, even though as you give it this definition, it makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
fast food doesn't necessarily have to be horrible for you food.
Burgers. Now for me, like I can't come to terms with Panera Bread being fast food. Like to me, fast food is right up until that line. And somewhere right around that Panera Bread line, it becomes something else. It becomes fast casual.
Right.
Yeah. Still a quick serve restaurant, but maybe not traditional fast food, how I think about it.
Okay.
Basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, Joe, Dave, do you guys eat fast food? Tell me what is, okay, Dave, start. What's your relationship to fast food today?
I don't do as much of it as I used to. And in fact, I do a lot less of it if I didn't have kids and if, you know, because they always want to do it. My wife is always, you know, giving in to them. So I don't like it, but we do eat it. I mean, Chick-fil-A is probably a go-to. That's probably my compromise fast food place. Cause I'm like, I could get a grilled chicken sandwich there, you know? So they'll want to go to Cane's or any of these other places that have fried chicken and nothing for me. So pretty much Chick-fil-A, we'll do pizza. You know, I'm from Jersey. So we got like a very New York style pizza, Rhea here. And, you know, we'll get that sometimes. But, you know, not an In-N-Out, you know, so we do it. We still do it more than I'd like. I'm trying to kick it, trying to kick the habit, guys. Sure. How about you?
Well, from this very healthy visage, you could see I eat more than I really should. Honestly, almost every day, but it's probably more that fast casual we're talking about. Like I have a Baja Fresh around the corner and it's the easiest thing. I work from home. I'll order it, run and get it, bring it back. And it's, you know, it's too easy and I rely on it. And I'll tell you what, like, you kind of get into that what Dave's saying is like, you kind of make excuses where it's kind of healthy. It's like black beans and rice and chicken and I'd say like maybe probably the sodium is probably, you know, destroying, you know, my blood pressure. That's something we don't even think about. You're like, oh, the calories aren't bad. And it's got, you know, beans and rice. And yeah, the sodium is what's killer in that stuff. So,
yeah. Well, for me, my daughter absolutely loves In-N-Out Burger. Now I've eaten all the In-N-Out Burger that I need in a lifetime. Now that's not me ragging on In-N-Out Burger. It's very good. But I don't need any more of it. You know, however many burgers you can have from In-N-Out Burger in a lifetime, I've hit that. So anyway, my daughter's favorite restaurant is In-N-Out. So she gets that once every other week, roughly. And then we really try not to have fast food, but there's a couple of exceptions. Like El Pollo Loco is something that's pretty easy and quick. And you can pretend that they have some healthy options. I don't know whether that's true or not, but you know, I can pretend. So those are really the two fast food restaurants that as a family unit that we eat from time to time, not too often, but from time to time. Now, I have a little bit of a different experience, and I'm trying to, like, you know, teach better than I live in this, because, like, there are times that I will go out, you know, and just run to through a fast food restaurant. Not every day and not every week, but from time to time, I will go to McDonald's because it's down the street. Doesn't mean it's right, but I do it. And no shame to anybody who does it way more than that. But by the way, personal experience, my grandmother worked at McDonald's when I was a teenager.
Oh, wow.
And she would come home. She would work quite late, but she lived with us while I was a teenager. And she would come home quite late, 11:30 at night, with bags of McDonald's.
Oh, gosh. Sent home with whoever works there.
Which is not great, but yeah. It was kind of cool at the time.
And that's hilarious.
If those, you know, if that behavior that I started when I was a teenager, you know, has anything to do with my late night munchies and stuff like that now.
Probably.
Could be another variable, Brad. I don't know.
Right. Well, I think it's part of the design we're going to talk about is the way that the restaurants, like, just hook you and you know,
yeah.
It's almost like
yeah.
cigarettes. They want to get you while you're young yeah. and make you a lifetime yeah. loyal
absolutely
customer.
Yeah, that gets into today's thesis, which for me is that fast food is brilliantly effective UX in design. Fast food restaurants are some of the best in the world, the best companies in the world at building personas, understanding their customers, and designing entire experiences every step of the way around that with clear purpose, right? Every step of design, the business model, the entire user experience served around getting customers in and out. It's brilliant, economic, and effective design. And here's the thing, that might not be a good thing, right?
Yeah.
The fact that it's so good at its purpose and has right. so much considered design might not be a good thing for the world.
Yeah.
So the question, does fast food suck, might be more complicated. It's not yes or no, because it's right. great, brilliant design, but let's get into it. To understand the history, though, Dave, take us back in time. How did we get here?
Oh, yeah, let's do a little time travel, fellas. All right, so the history of fast food. Okay, you know what? It's Rome again for the win, fellas. You know, they had, like, food carts and stuff like that. The Han Dynasty, back in the 2nd century, they had noodle stands that were open all night. You know, into the Middle Ages, they had street vendors that sold pies and waffles and pancakes and meats and stuff like that. England, right? Merry old England. Fish and chips appears in the late 1800s, okay? Then you had, in Berlin, automats. You know these things, guys? Like the
barely. What is that?
Yeah, I got a picture in my head.
Right.
Somebody help
1950s
here.
Space age. It's like you
yeah,
basically like, get a sandwich or a pie like out of a vending machine. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like big vending machines. Okay.
It's yeah, yeah. It's hot food vending machines. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah,
sure. And then those, a bag of chips. It's like an actual turkey sandwich.
Exactly. Think of if you put a TV dinner. Do they still use that today? Is that still a thing? They don't say TV dinner anymore. That makes me a child of the 80s.
Frozen dinners.
Latchkey kids know what I'm talking about. Yeah,
sure.
You take one of those TV dinners and you put it into a vending machine. That's an automat. Okay. So that moves to New York City in early 1900s, like at the turn of the century. And that's the beginning of fast food in the United States. Then you got White Castle, good old Harold and Kumar in 1921. The first hamburger chain, White Castle, opens up and
invented stoners.
It immediately invented stoners. And then after World War II, people were thriving, more disposable income, that led to more dining out. Prior, that wasn't a thing for most of the country. So in 1948, we get the first In-N-Out in drive-through in California. In 1952, KFC opens its first restaurant. Mm-hmm. And then late to the game, 1955, McDonald's. And they offer burgers for 15 cents, which is adjusted for inflation, about $1.60. Kudos to whoever did the math on that in the notes.
Yep.
1958, Pizza Hut Dine-In. Now, Brad, I see that you have a memory. I have one as well. So I'm going to let you tell yours about the Pizza Hut Dine-In, because Pizza Hut wasn't always fast food. Okay? Talk about it, Brad.
Yes, I remember Pizza Hut being a sit-down restaurant when I was a young child. And I kind of recall it being kind of fancy.
I mean, yeah,
for my POV as a 4-year-old anyway.
Yeah.
But I remember my mom telling me when she first heard of pizza, when she was like a teenager or a pre-teenager, like that wasn't a thing if you lived in the middle of the country.
Wow.
Until about this time. Yeah. And a little bit later, if you're in super rural areas like she was. So yeah, she heard about this crazy new fad called pizza.
Wow. I hope
she doesn't mind that I'm aging her, and hopefully I'm not getting this story wrong.
Yeah. My grandmother used to take me. And I remember it was a treat. Yep. Going to Pizza Hut with grandma was a thing. We would sit down, we'd get that deep dish pizza, which, you know, nowadays is sacrilege to me, you know, loving the New York style pizza. I didn't know I was tricked into eating that Chicago-esque dining experience. But I remember the same thing, Brad, same exact experience. It was like, it was a restaurant. It was not fast food.
Do you guys remember, or did you have Book It where if you like read over the summer, like you'd get prizes, like you could earn a personal pan pizza? That's when we went, and it was nice. A treat. It was like, oh, Fridays we would go and get a pitcher of Pepsi, and they'd bring out the pizza on a tray. And
it's kind of a shame that they were forced into being a fast food restaurant. Like they couldn't maintain that model, because I guess all these, you know, Domino's and Papa John's kind of
How is shaky still a thing and Pizza Hut didn't make it?
Pizza Hut still by me is still a restaurant. Like you can go in and sit down, but what they've done is they've added like made it more of like a sports bar feel. Yeah. Like they got the TVs and stuff like that. So it's not the same experience, but you could still dine in. You could still dine in at a Pizza Hut.
So Pizza Hut only introduced delivery and carry out in 1984. I don't know if you said that, Dave, but that's wild to me. Like I was 5 years old in 1984.
Yeah.
Pizza Hut wasn't delivering until then. That's wild.
That is pretty crazy. Let's get back into it. Car culture, big deal. You've all been to the hop, right, fellas? Okay, so American car culture is, you know, freeways let you drive everywhere, see movies in your car, you can eat in your car, you had I call it the hop, I don't know if that's right. What is it called?
Yeah, car hop.
Yeah, you got the car hop.
Put the little tray on your window.
The lady skirting, like,
skating around.
Already in slip there. Skating around, delivering your stuff. Let's skip ahead to the 70s, disco ball in it. Here we got Domino's, introduced 30 minutes or less delivery. Wow. Domino's was around in 73.
Yeah, they were around in the 60s.
That's bizarre, because I don't remember Domino's until later in my life. Maybe because, again, I grew up in Jersey, there's a pizza stand on every corner. I don't remember a Domino's. Maybe they were there. I don't know. Oh, yeah, I do remember, because they had that little guy.
The gnome.
Avoid
the noid.
At all costs. Only 80s kids will understand.
Exactly. Okay, by 1980, 60,000 fast food restaurants exist in the U.S. Okay, this has a huge impact on how food is produced and manufactured. The country needed a lot of the same foods and had to be consistent. As growth occurs, the big boys start looking at international expansion. Now, this is interesting. In 1990, Moscow opens up a McDonald's and has 25,000 applicants. Is that job applicants? What does that mean?
Job applicants who wanted to work at Moscow McDonald's.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Now here's an interesting thing, guys. I saw from the 90s a commercial with Gorbachev in it.
Gorbachev?
Yeah, like the actual Gorbachev for Pizza Hut. Like, so they brought Pizza Hut to Russia as well. You know, we came in, fast food brought down the Iron Curtain, apparently. Right. So Gorbachev's in there. And there's a young kid going, oh, I love Gorbachev. He's bringing change to Russia. And then the old guy is like, his dad is like, no, he's destroyed our culture and our economy is in chaos. And they're fighting. And then the mom is like, but he brought us Pizza Hut. And then they all agree. And then they go, hail Gorbachev, hail Gorbachev. The whole restaurant stands up. It's absolutely bonkers.
Let's drop that audio in, shall we?
Полный хаос.
Перспективы.
Политическая нестабильность.
Да благодаря ему у нас есть Pizza Hut.
За Горбачева!
За Горбачева!
За Горбачева! За Горбачева!
Sometimes nothing brings people together like a nice hot pizza from Pizza Hut.
За Горбачева!
Brilliant.
The interesting thing, guys, McDonald's, Pizza Hut, since Russia under Putin has started this ridiculous, disastrous, immoral war, all those have pulled out. McDonald's is gone. Pizza Hut is gone. Isn't that crazy?
Absolutely crazy. Yeah.
So I think that's all I have. I mean, we're pretty that brings us up to today. I mean, mostly. Yeah.
All right.
Fast casual then became a thing. One thing I want to say is when I was a kid, there was no fast casual. I mean, when we were kids, it was like you go to McDonald's. maybe once every other weekend. It was a treat. And then when you're really, it was something really amazing happened, you go to a restaurant. Like a, for us, it was like a Red Lobster was like the thing, you know, it was like big, a big deal. Now these kids have so many choices and go out to eat all the time. It's crazy. Yeah.
You know, I always take for granted how quickly and how far things have changed, even since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Right. And I think if you rewind back to post-World War, you know, era, that's when things really, really started because people had more disposable income all of a sudden after World War II. And they started going out to eat, you know, that wasn't really a thing, you know, which is impossible for us to imagine. But before World War II, going out to restaurants was not a regular occurrence.
Yeah, yeah.
Brad, I wasn't a kid in World War II like you are. But I mean, even from the 80s till today, is what I'm saying. It's changed dramatically.
Dramatically.
I mean, maybe I was just poor. I don't know.
Well, there was that too. Like, you know, I grew up in rural areas. And you know, it's crazy. I have a limited frame of reference. Anyway, so that's enough of all that.
Enough of that.
Why don't we get into the design of fast food now? And that is, simply put, the design of getting us hooked. To become easy, accessible, to become habit-forming. It's scientifically engineered to be habit-forming and addictive. Now, I'm not talking about just the food here, and this is where it gets interesting, and I'm not even mad. It's just like respect. They do this every step of the way through the experience to make it, quote-unquote, sticky from a design perspective.
Sticky.
Not from a food perspective, because that's gross. You know, we don't want sticky, you know, fast food restaurants. But you know what I mean? Like, you know, these are miracles of design that are highly effective at getting us addicted and hooked on the experience, not just the food.
Well, one more piece of history, guys, that I left out, semi-related. Coca-Cola and fast food go hand in hand.
Sure.
Okay. So like a McDonald's Coke with the French fries. Can you imagine French fries without Coke? Come on.
Right. I don't care what kind of a food snob you are. McDonald's Coke, a proper McDonald's Coke, and hot McDonald's French fries is an absolutely miraculous combination. It is absolutely delicious. Let's not pretend it's not.
I'll tell you when it would have been better, Brad. You want to know when it would be better? What's 1902, I'm sorry, when Coke had a different ingredient than caffeine. Anybody know what that is?
I think we all know.
It's in the name.
It's right there.
Cocaine.
Guys, let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast about this. What a great idea. Yeah. We'll do four seasons, man.
Yeah, yeah. Let's do it all right now. Right now, Brad. So, yeah, they didn't just remove the cocaine. They replaced it with, like, sugar and caffeine, which, surprise, is much more addictive than cocaine. Is crazy.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the same lessons that these fast food restaurants kind of like, you know, have taken to heart, have built upon. It's like that was food science back then. That was absolutely engineering the Coca-Cola product to make sure that it was, you know, addictive in even deeper ways. And maybe some of it was an accident, but certainly not most of it.
It's kind of evil.
Well, yeah.
It's like, evil. Yeah.
But they have all these companies now have teams and teams and teams and buildings and buildings and buildings of scientists, food scientists.
How many buildings, Brad?
At least three.
Oh, okay. not
more than 10. Very much deliberative design. You know, it's designed to make it so easy and so cheap that we can't really stop. And maybe a question that we need to kind of thread through this episode is how much of a bad thing that is, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's actually different schools of thought about how terrible fast food is for you. Mm-hmm. I'm of the mind, if you're going to use a blanket generalized statement about fast food, it's not good for you, right? Oh, I mean, yes, there's sure we can come up with some examples of, but you know, we have to talk in generalities here. So fast food in general, not the healthiest options. Do not recommend.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
It's fair.
Yeah.
I have a trick question for you too. Do you know the world's largest distributor of toys? Now, context clues might give you a big leg up here if you want to guess.
Ooh, I know.
KB?
KB Toys.
Judy's Love Boutique.
Oh, wrong kind of toys.
Oh, okay. Tell us, Brad.
Spencer's Gifts.
Spencer's Gifts. Toys R Us. Mattel? Hasbro? Nintendo? No, of course it is McDonald's. It's the world's largest distributor of toys.
Wow.
Consistently year over year, decade over decade. Of course, that's because of Happy Meals.
Happy Meals. Of course.
As a design principle, surprise and delight, right? Like, do you guys remember getting Happy Meals as a kid?
Remember, I still get Happy Meals, Brad.
Okay. Right on.
I remember going back to finish the collection. Like if there was like, you know, four Ninja Turtles or whatever, like you'd go back because you wanted to get Donatello. Like I've got three Leonardos or whatever.
Yeah, I had to get all those Muppet babies, man.
Yeah.
Those Muppet babies and little cars, that's what I remember the most from. Like the coolest Happy Meal toys from when I was a kid. It's deliberative design and marketing strategies created to make lifelong customers and hooking them and creating addiction and stickiness of design very, very early. And then they have deliberate design that ages up with their customers, if we're talking about McDonald's, to transition them out of the Happy Meal into the big kids meal or whatever it's called, Mighty Meal, it is.
Yeah.
And then from there, you're going to enter your teen years and wouldn't you know it, they got something there for you too. And then it's a whole funnel and it starts with that Happy Meal. It's crazy.
Well, why don't they stop there? Let's think about it. Now that marijuana is legal, right? I got an idea for Carl's Jr. I got an idea, right? So to move them up the chain. Once they're 18 or 21, whatever the age is, you get like a munchie bag, right? And you get like a baby joint, right? Oh, and then like, I don't know, and some like chips and like whatever. And some.
I'm pretty sure Taco Bell's entire advertising
Taco Bell is
based around exactly what you're talking about.
I'm pretty blown away by that, like creating entire national campaigns just around stoners. It's a way bigger market than I understand.
Fourth meal, 2 a.m. lunch. Yeah, we know exactly who they're targeting.
It's brilliant. It's
not
brilliant.
Even veiled. It's right it's right out there.
They don't even need to give out the mini joints. They already got them. I get it. All right.
Moving on. Let's get into the actual design a bit. You know, and Joe, you have an interest in architecture and interior design, and there are some commonalities here as well. What did you find?
Well, okay, first off, and this is going to come from an architecture standpoint. McDonald's actually, you know, those arches, they're so commonplace now, but when they first came out, they were space age. They were part of what's called the Googie architecture design. And if you live in Southern California, you know what it is. It's like the big orange spikes on norms, or it's Bob's Big Boy with the slanty roof.
Very mid-century space age.
That 76 in Beverly Hills with a sweeping roof, or everybody knows the Welcome to Las Vegas sign. It's got that colorful circles and it's really cool. You know, it's very Jetson-y. So those McDonald's arches, right away, space age, new, cool. And I think a lot of this other stuff is pretty obvious, but the color red, it's not a surprise that McDonald's, In-N-Out, a lot of that stuff is like red and yellow.
McDonald's, Wendy's, In-N-Out, Chick-fil-A, all of them practically use the color red in some
which is supposed to be like a stimulant. It's, you know, you go to a restaurant and it's dark, it's cool, you want to sit and be peaceful. This is all about action, excited, get in, get your food, get out.
Comfortable but not too comfortable.
The lighting, it's bright, it's not dim, it's not inviting for you to like sit there and have a casual conversation. It's the menu boards, it's all real simple, real familiar value meals. We order by number now. It's not even like, you know what, I'd like a,
it's designed to not make you have to think
at all. You know, the seats aren't comfortable, the music's up tempo, it's all designed make you like go, oh my god, I gotta eat right now as much as I can, and then get out the door and then go.
By the way, like when we're talking about food, and we're not food scientists, and that's not really my interest here, but have you noticed it's really difficult to get like over full on fast food?
Oh yes, all the time. We eat McDonald's. The rare times we eat McDonald's, we like love it, we're like, oh, it's so good, and then like 20 minutes later we're like, damn, I'm hungry.
Yeah, for sure. And that's of course by design too, right? Like I went to El Coyote yesterday. You guys know that Mexican restaurant? I think the oldest restaurant in Los Angeles. Anyhow, point being, I ordered something called the El Coyote pizza, which is a giant mistake. Number one, the food sucks. But like this giant garbage plate of Mexican food and ingredients. I love Mexican food, but this was awful. I got like 8 bites into it and like, okay, my body will not tolerate me to have more of this. 8 bites in, like, okay, I cannot have any, not another nibble of this. That never would happen.
Or it was just bad?
But no, I'm talking about my satiation levels. Part of it was that it was disgusting, but a big part of it was that I was satiated by food. And it filled my belly in a way that real food does, in a way that fast food is scientifically engineered not to do.
Should I jump right to that, Brad, or did you want to go through some? Okay. All right. So this is something I read. Quote, fast food is specifically engineered to be inexpensive, convenient, to trigger cravings and overeating. It's flavorful, but not so strong tasting that you'll get tired of it quickly. Mm-hmm. And most importantly, it's high in fat, sugar, salt, and caffeine, all the substances that have been shown to alter brain chemistry in a way that drug addiction does. they don't make an effort to make this food satiating. It doesn't yeah. fill you.
No, I get it.
It literally go, oh, I feel great.
Is that the sound of you feeling great, Joe?
I love you, Dave.
Oh, man. You know, I think that's probably why you can't get like a proper spicy anything on any fast food menu. Like if you like spice, you know, right. Wendy's will advertise a spicy chicken sandwich, but it ain't spicy. And I think that's probably why, because that would fill you up. They must like try hard not to make things like too flavorful to your point, right. Joe, for those reasons. That's
there's a term for it. It's called hyper palatable.
Hyper palatable. I love it.
Yeah.
As an aside,
these aren't coincidences. This is thought out. This is very well thought out.
Absolutely. Nothing is coincidence. It's all purposeful design.
So Brad, I think we skipped over the drive-through line experience. We're going to talk about that.
Drive-throughs.
Yeah. Because that's
technological marvels, engineering marvels, these drive-throughs, especially when they work. Now, you know, I think there's now two types of drive-thrus. There's the old school ones, which haven't really fully updated. But you drive through like some modern ones. They've got two lanes. They might have people like actually people out there.
I like the people
with little iPads. Smart. You're paying right there at the pad. They are so freaking efficient. Like we just have to give respect.
Yeah, props.
Right.
Yeah.
And that is something that has been accomplished through iterative design over decades. Right. And I just love it.
I honestly don't even know how they do it. Like, how do you know which car was the one? It's amazing.
Oh, they put it on it. They put it on it. Mine said red sedan. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. All right. Which is interesting.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's
know, sometimes if I take like the Porsche, it's like, you know, 911 convertible.
Is that what it says?
Yeah.
Joe, when you get your motorcycle, it's going to say crotch rocket. That's what
it'll say. It's this guy is going to be dead in 5 days.
the guy
who's not going to be
alive. That's not funny, Brad. That's not funny. Why am I laughing? You bastard. Oh, all right. Man. So what else about the design of fast food? I like that it's consistent. You know, you always know what you're going to get, whether you're in Dubai or you're in Kansas. You're always going to get the exact same thing, kind of.
And Dave, it's not just the food again that we're talking about. It's the consistency of the overall experience, where chances are if I go into a McDonald's in Spain or in Egypt or in Japan, I know what to do. Doesn't matter if I speak the language. Yeah. This is a universal language of design, right? That has been taught to us over the decades by these companies. Yep. Brilliantly.
But by the way, some of those places may not have meat. I just thought about. So I don't want to be culturally insensitive. I'm sure there are places that have fast food that you can't get pork or cow. Oh,
by the way, trivia for you guys related to pork. You said that. Mm. A McRib has many ingredients.
Yes, it does.
Many, many, many ingredients. Now, one of them. Okay, let me back up. Some of their ingredients are pork tripe.
Okay.
Pork heart. And pork quote byproduct. And a grade that a McRib does not have is pork ribs.
Correct. Well, the heart's from the chest and it's, you know, fairly good for you.
It's rib adjacent.
Yeah. Right. That's an aside.
I like it. Okay. So what else? Have we wrapped this up? Like, what else are we talking about?
Another quick aside there, Dave, you're talking about like international stuff. The one place, if you're in Japan, you're talking about like, I can go to McDonald's Japan. If you're in Japan and you go into KFC around December, watch out because they're going to be backed up because KFC is a Christmas tradition in Japan. Like they order it weeks in advance. Like, you know how we have like a Christmas dinner here? Japan, it's KFC.
Come on. They order buckets. You're making this up.
No, I'm not. They order weeks in advance. The bucket is for Christmas dinner. That is how culturally iconic these things have become around the world. They become holiday traditions.
That's funny. I never knew that.
We've got a funny story for our Spanish-speaking listeners about McDonald's.
Are you going to say it? Are you going to tell it in Spanish?
Our Spanish-speaking listeners will know what I'm talking about, and everyone else will have to use their imagination. I think for context, you might be able to pick it up. Don't ask me to elaborate, though. Okay. So I'm in Spain, and I'm learning Spanish. This is my early days of learning Spanish. I'm fairly good at Spanish now, but I was studying abroad in Spain. And I go into McDonald's, and they have this deal where at the time, it was pesetas, and that was the currency. You could order an ice cream cone for one peseta, which is like less than a dollar at the time. So the word for an ice cream cone, if you order one at McDonald's in Spain, is cono. Okay. So I, again, me learning Spanish, I walked up to the counter and asked for a coño, which is a different word entirely, and one that is not appreciated in polite society. So,
yeah, but did you get the coño?
I was politely corrected on my Spanish, and it is not a mistake that I will make twice.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
All right, that's the story. So, Brad, what are we going to do to fix this? Are we at the solution part of the show?
I think we're at the solution part of the show. I mean, you know, I think we've agreed that fast food in general is probably something that should not be an everyday occurrence. You should not have reliance or addiction upon it, even though we are being addicted to it against our will. So what do we do? Well, a few things. I have some personal thoughts and observations. I have a child, and she'll be 9 years old when this episode drops, and she's never had McDonald's, not once.
Wow.
So I'm pretty proud of that. We do have that fast food that I talked about, but my wife and I are drawing the line between, you know, what we find acceptable or what we're willing to compromise on. Like I said, like El Pollo Loco, In-N-Out Burger, and what we're not, like McDonald's. So I'm not introducing her to this. I'm also not introducing her to marketing because we don't have cable television, and marketing is a big part of it, right?
Yeah.
So we don't see those commercials, which also helps.
They're on her iPad, Brad. Don't be fooled. They're getting in. They're getting in somehow. They're on the YouTube videos. They're there. Well,
at least not in the traditional way that, you know, I experienced when I was a kid. Now, I need to caveat this again. This doesn't apply to me. I do it in secret and in shame. So shame eating a 10-piece chicken McNuggets. I find a lot of joy in that. I try not to do it too often, but it does happen. Just not for my daughter.
Sounds like a plan for after the pod.
And then I have some other. What do you guys think?
The only solution I could see is if you take some of these fast casuals and turn them into proper fast food QSR, I think that would make a difference. Like, so, you know, when I work downtown LA, there'd be some salad restaurants. You could select what you want in your salad and then you'd go. Now, quicker would be.
Yeah,
they'd have pre-prepared ones that you could pick. Oh, I want a number one. I want a number three. I want a number four. I want a number five. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then you get that and then you go. So I think that could be a solution because I'll tell you what, making a salad is not easy.
No.
I thought, you know, prepping them sucked. And then when I started working from home, I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. I'll be able to make salads for lunch. I mean, it's a good 20, 30 minutes of chopping and slicing and dicing and tossing. And then I'm like, shit, now I got to eat while I'm working because I just gobbled up all the time making the salad. Right. I think if there was a place like that, I think that would be interesting to me. But I don't know.
Yeah, man. I have seen that kind of work.
Yeah.
And there's a restaurant called Amy's. Many of our users might have seen this brand in their grocery store freezer shelf. Amy's is an organic and vegetarian
food.
I think it started in the grocery stores, but they expanded to having four locations of drive-through restaurants of the same principles, right? So drive-through restaurants that don't have meat, that focus on sustainability of their food, and that goes all throughout the building design as well, which is pretty cool. So anyone in Northern California, recommend you check this out. But it's fast food for sure, and it's cheap.
Is there any down here, Brad?
No. There's four locations in Northern California.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And it really does feel kind of like a pilot program, you know?
Yeah.
It feels early days, and I think that getting mass consumers to adopt to this is something that is possible, but will take a lot of thought.
Yeah. Here's the problem. Here's where they're at a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. The crack cocaine-ification of food is not present in healthy foods.
Right.
So if you could find a way to make people addicted to healthy foods. And I'll tell you what, like when I eat a good salad, I really, like it gives me a kick because you got all the nutrients. So I don't know, maybe.
Well, I think Amy's does, you know, and, you know, the food is a good quality and it feels like real food, but it also feels like fast food.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Road trip, fellas. We're going to have to go and do the UX of Amy's.
Yeah. And there is a place here called Chop Shop, which is kind of a fast food salad place. Like you could pre-order what you want in your salads, but they're just not ubiquitous. You really have to seek out these healthy alternatives.
You probably need more than salads because not everybody loves salads. Like maybe an albacore tuna sandwich that doesn't have a ton of mayo slopped in, like you're going to get at Subway's, you know, or Jersey Mike's.
Can we just talk about mayo for a second? And how every fast food restaurant uses mayo.
Yeah.
And it's all gloppy and too much of it and disgusting.
Joe knows. We got a story about mayo, right, Joe? Oh, God.
We do?
Yeah. So I hate when people put mayo on any fast food without asking. It feels offensive. Like, that's not a normal thing to put on a burger. Like, you don't just slop on some mayo. You have to ask for that. So, like, ketchup, okay, sure. Maybe mustard. Pickles, of course. But, like, mayo.
You can't take off pickles. You can't take off
mayo,
condiments.
You can't just put that on my burger. So I used to complain about it all the time. I think Wendy's does this. Somebody does this. Burger King or Wendy's. One of them does it. And we went to Six Flags, Joe, up in Valencia or whatever it is. And we went to the McDonald's after, or Wendy's, whatever's there. I think it was a Wendy's. And this guy is just ranting at the person behind the counter. And he's like, I said no mayo on my burger. And he just throws this burger at the lady's face.
Oh, my God. That's not funny.
Okay, Brad. I just built this story up, Brad. Did you not experience it the way we all experienced it? Like, of course it's not funny. If I led with this guy threw a hamburger at a lady, that's terrible. But the fact that you're not supposed to put mayo on a burger, I think it warranted it. I think it was fine. Yeah, no, Brad, of course it's terrible. You should not throw food at people. But so I was in a weird place where I was half shocked and disgusted at this person, but half super happy because I've always wanted to do that.
What is Chris Rock? You've always wanted to throw food at somebody?
No, I've always wanted to just, I don't know, like fight the Revolutionary War of anti-mayo.
Well, right, fight the mayo wars.
And what does Chris Rock say? It's like, I don't endorse it, but I understand.
Yes, that's it. That's it. 100%. 100%.
Not saying 100%. Right, but I understand. No, don't throw food at anybody, but also fast food mayo sucks. And obviously, like, it's just an extra layer of fat, right? Oh, like, as if the burger or the chicken isn't fatty enough. Just an extra smear of fat is scientifically designed.
Here's the worst of it. The worst mayo experience. Freaking when you go to a sandwich shop and they ask you if you want mayo on the bread with your tuna salad. Why would I want that?
Can I tell you guys the truth? Like, I get very uncomfortable talking about mayonnaise. It's like personally kind of disgusting to a point that I don't like talking about it. I'll eat it sometimes, but like, very, very specific certain
mayonnaise.
I get queasy talking about this.
Mayonnaise, Brad. Okay.
All right. Isn't it a derivative of one of the like French mother sauces? Like, aren't they all kind of derived from the same?
French mother sounds even worse than mayo.
French mother sauces.
I'm going to call it French mother sauce from now on.
Well, there's something.
Cousin to Bernays and all that.
It's just olive oil and eggs.
Yeah,
that's all it is. It's all
anyway. It's offensive.
It goes great with fries
anyway.
I like how the Europeans do it.
Here's the other one, Brad. In the notes, you say you also cook. I think cooking at home is a solution.
Yeah I spend a great deal of time and money on my family's food to a fault. I learned to love doing it, and as a byproduct of that, we just eat out less. As a byproduct of eating out less, we eat less fast food. You know, I mean, if that's how we ate, which is like a lot of people do, it's a challenge to find food for people to eat if you're not cooking it, I find.
Right.
Hey guys, do you know what's great about this episode? I don't know if it's true, but it felt like a fast food episode. It went pretty quick.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's probably 2 hours long, but it felt quick. It felt like I was in and out.
In and out. I'm loving it. Ba, 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 ba.
Would you say we did it? Did we? I don't think we solved fast food. I don't think there's a solution besides cook for yourself. Yeah. And maybe if we have some entrepreneurs out there, you know, fast foodify healthy food, like more Amy's.
Yeah. Can you do it as cheaply, though? I think is the question. We didn't even really get into price points on all this stuff, which is a huge factor. Yeah,
that's the beauty of this show, Brad, Joe, is I just give the solutions. I'm not going to actually do this stuff.
Right.
That's true.
As we know.
See what happens.
Yeah.
And sometimes. Exactly.
They do the thing.
Yeah. So, by the way, can we talk about price for just a second? Because I know that we love.
Hey guys, remember I said it was a fast food episode? We're slowly moving into fast casual.
Okay. Well, to all of our users, all of our listeners out there, that is our show. Thank you so much for listening to the Sucks Podcast. Please remember to like and subscribe and tell a friend. Please drop us a line if you have a topic or if you want to be a guest. And in the meantime, we are wishing you all a well-designed life, good health, and good experiences. Ciao, Bella!
And now, Brad Combs really likes the phrase yada yada yada.
Yada 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 some girl yada 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 etc etc etc
yada 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 and in the news yada 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 I will go to McDonald's because it's down the street yada yada yada.